prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We've got a great show for you today. It's about a subject that you know I'm passionate about. We're going to be talking more about the Paleolithic style of eating. There is really anything other than that is artificial, in my opinion, but we're going to get into that in a minute. I got to remind everybody that a sponsor of mine, Primordial Performance, is closing out all of their pro hormones. They have some of the most advanced pro hormones out there, some of the strongest muscle builders and strength builders out there. And a lot of these are being added to lists all the time and being removed from the shelves, and Primordial Performance is elected to discontinue their pro hormone line. But that's a good thing for you. You can go to primordialperformance.com and stock up on some of the most amazing strength and muscle builders out there while they're still available, and you can save huge, up to 40%. So go to primordialperformance.com today and take advantage of it before it's all gone. And then you'll just be able to say, I remember when, but not anymore. Okay, my guest today, many people emailed me over the past year or so telling me I had to have Rob Wolf on the show. And thanks to a good friend of the show, Dr. Peter Rouse, he's here. How you doing, Rob?
Good. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. And it's important that the discussion that we're going to have today is just a continuation of the discussion that is an underlying theme of my show. And that is that longevity, health, strength, conditioning, all of it can be attained easily without any heroic effort or arduous tendencies by adhering to the diet that we were genetically predisposed to eat, and that is Paleolithic style of eating. What would you say about that comment, Rob?
Oh, I would totally agree with that, and it sounds like almost a preposterous hyperbolic claim until you look at the backside of that, which is that what you and I are probably recommending is that folks eat grass-fed meat, wild-caught fish, organic, local, seasonal produce, good fats, and that's kind of the basis of your shtick. And so really the application, even though it may be like this gargantuan kind of hyperbolic claim, the application is really not that challenging, and then the results are, I mean, they just speak for themselves. So,
well,
you know, it's
and
all
you know,
about just...
Without letting too much out of the bag, because I can't speak too much about it, but you and I both know a fellow named David Kekich, and the mission of his group is to reverse the aging process by 2029. They have some of the greatest minds in the world associated with them, guys like Aubrey de Grey and so on, and they're convinced that it can be done. And one of the things that Kekich came on the show recently and kind of alluded to was a study that's going to be released within the next 6 months that's going to make the hunter-gatherer diet, or for lack of better terms, the paleo diet, almost exclusively an anti-aging diet, in that eating this way can prolong life indefinitely. Now, obviously, there's other things that assault us, you know, the RF that we live in and the toxic chemicals that we come in contact with, but it's from a nutritional standpoint, it is the cornerstone of health. And I think that as the years go on, all of those who used to say to guys like me and guys like you, you're just a zealot, you know, this is ridiculous. I had a girl call me a food Nazi one night when I was in Los Angeles at a restaurant, and we got into the, and I wasn't eating paleo style, I was eating regular food, but because I started to espouse this, she said, you're a food Nazi. So.
Yeah, you get a lot of kickback on it, and the funny thing is if you sit folks down and just have them actually eat a couple of these meals or consider it, it's kind of like, okay, we're recommending like salmon and broccoli and maybe some blueberries, And so folks are kind of like, okay, that looks fairly nutritious. That seems okay. And so the application really is not nearly as intimidating as all the like theory wars and stuff that go on. It's just getting people to try it. It's the bugger up front sometimes.
Right, right. Now let's talk about something that I've always wanted to explore with other individuals where we've talked about the paleo style of eating, but I always forget to bring it up, and I'm not going to forget today. And that is food combining. I can't believe that Paleolithic style human beings, grabbed a salmon out of the stream and then looked at each other and went, you know what would taste good with this broccoli? I got to believe that they ate what they had in front of them. So they were generally eating single foods and maybe even for days if it was a large animal. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And Professor Cordain did he's done a couple of analyses where he looks at some maybe alternative views of nutrition, like macrobiotics and like food combining, and just kind of asked the question, is there any validity to this stance from an evolutionary biology perspective? And this idea of maybe single pot meals or you know, simple meals definitely makes sense. Robert Lee lived among the Kung San in sub-Saharan Africa for 30 years, and their meals tended to be very, maybe not monochromatic, maybe it wasn't one item, but it was one or two items, because you usually had a hunting group and a gathering group, and so there was usually a little bit of vegetable matter, and there was usually some animal stuff there. But, it, you know, like you said, more often than not, if they ended up with a large kill, or if it was a particular time of year when there was a ton of really tasty melons that were available,
bingo,
and stuff like that, that's what they ate. And they ate that
until they ran out of it. I have to believe, you know, look, if I'm the paleo guy responsible for my small family and I'm contributing to my small group, and I go out and I kill a bison, right? And we're going to eat on that bison until there's nothing left to eat. We're not going to eat it and go, you know, I'm done. What do we do with the leftovers? They probably ate that animal meat. Now, granted, when they were moving around the territory, they may have found berries to eat and so on as a snack. But by and large, probably for weeks or days at least, they were eating a single type of food until they ran out. When they came upon the melons, I'm sure they devoured the melons until they were sick of melons or there were no melons left.
Yeah, and I mean, this is well supported in the anthropological data. It makes some sense too when people are talking about like trying to reach balance with their nutrition. You know, we hear some stuff about eating a multicolored diet and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I think that's all legit. That's really solid. But the problem that I see is that people kind of spaz out on that and they try to have balance every meal, or they try to have balance within a day. And I think it's totally reasonable to achieve balance over weeks and months. And eat a little bit seasonally, eat a little more locally, and all that sort of jive. And then it really simplifies your eating. And that's not to say that you're going to keel over and die from eating a complex meal, you know, like a marinara sauce with spaghetti squash and several seafood, you know, items thrown in there. But I think it just allows you a little latitude to just say, okay, I can eat a simple meal, and I'm not going to end up woefully nutritionally deficient because of that.
Well, and you know, a lot of the problems that we have today in this society stem from glucose management and digestion, and the common link between those two things is the pancreas. The pancreas mm-hmm. has to produce lots of insulin to manage the type of diets that most people eat here, which are starch-heavy, carbohydrate-heavy diets. And also, the pancreas is producing, aside from bile, lots of the enzymes that are required to break down the food in our stomach. And we know that the pancreas is being overworked. I have to believe, and I have no way to prove what I'm saying, but I have to believe that food combining confuses the pancreas, because when you've got, you know, complex carbohydrates, saturated fats and complex proteins in your stomach, the pancreas is all three factories have to go into gear instead of just one.
Well, you know, my understanding of digestion is such that at the pancreatic level, any given meal that you throw in, you're going to release enzymes that are breaking down proteins, carbohydrates, fats, nucleotides. I mean, you're breaking everything down. But then if we go a little bit further downstream and we start looking at competition at the absorptive level in the intestines, then I think that that's where you could potentially get a little bit of just surface area competition, maybe a little bit of funky stuff going on with regards to gut flora if you've got a really wacky mix of nutrients in there. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where we get more a simpler way of eating could certainly benefit digestion. But it, in my understanding, it's happening more on that interface in the intestines going into the body versus like a signaling in the pancreas.
That actually makes more sense now that you said that than my original idea, because because you're right. The pancreas is going to produce hydrochloric acid. Well, I mean, the stomach is producing hydrochloric acid, right? The proton mm-hmm. pumps, but nonetheless, it's going to attack everything in your stomach. But I could see what you're saying, because I can see how some foods would complicate the transient mode of the food as it's traveling, where one wants to go faster and one wants to go slower. An example of this is eating something very complex and then following it with a banana. The banana digests very, very quickly, and the food in front of it is moving slowly. So what you end up having is you start to get some gas buildup in the stomach because you have the banana starts to ferment while it's waiting to get into the intestines. The other food is moving slowly. So I can see it, what you're saying by the motility, if you will, rate of different foods too.
Yeah. I would definitely buy that. Like a high protein, high fat meal is going to slow gastric emptying and slow gastric motility, and that's because we need longer time in that small intestine to emulsify the fats with bile salts and mix in all the digestive enzymes. Whereas the fruit is a little bit quicker moving because of ease of digestion. So I definitely agree.
Now you mentioned something else when we come back we're going to move into. So we talked about food combining. I want to talk about the influences of seasonality. We don't have seasonal foods anymore. We did when I was a kid. We're talking today with Rob Wolf. You can learn more about him by going to his website, robwolf.com, robwolf.com. And we're going to talk about a food product that he's also involved with a little bit later in the show. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hey, this is Carl. Are you tired of your current wireless service? Were you promised low rates but ended up on an antiquated system with poor coverage and slow texting? Well, now check out Lightyear Wireless, the official wireless company of Superhuman Radio. Go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Lightyear Wireless banner to get the lowest rates for unlimited calls and texting on 3G and 4G networks. There's no reason to get substandard service any longer. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Lightyear Wireless banner and get on board with the official wireless company of Superhuman Radio, Lightyear Wireless.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
The federal government is more aggressive than ever prosecuting anabolic steroid-related cases. Whether you're a physician, supplement company, or citizen, ignorance of the law is not a defense. Buying from overseas pharmacies, large numbers of patients on hormone replacement therapy, and releasing new hormone-based supplements can all be red flags to the federal government. Don't take chances. You need attorneys that have years of experience defending anabolic steroid-related cases. You need J. Clark Baird and Bill Butler. Knowledge is power. Know where you stand before the federal government comes knocking. Go to SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. That's SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. Go today and be safer tomorrow.
LG Science's pre-workout performance enhancer Anadrolic State GT has grown exponentially in popularity in recent months. In July, Anadrolic State GT was named 2010 number one pre-workout product by BestRecovery.com, as well as nominated as best pre-workout product by Bodybuilding.com. We here at LG Science's want to give back to you, which is why, for a limited time, we will be giving customers a free 330-gram bottle of BC plus EAA hydrolyzed peptides with each purchase of Anadrolic State GT from bodybuilding.com. That's right. Order Anadrolic State GT at bodybuilding.com now and get your free BC plus EAA. Offer only available while supplies last.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest today is Rob Wolf, and we're talking about the paleo solution. It is the solution. Everything else is an artificial diet. People need to understand that now. Anyway, Rob, let's talk about seasonality for a second. Yeah, I remember a day when you couldn't get grapefruit in the wintertime when I was a kid. There were seasonal fruits. There were seasonal foods. There were things you had to do without. How has seasonality or the access to food year-round affected us?
You know, on some levels, it's just created, in the words of a T.S. Wyatt and Ben Formby, the folks that wrote Lights Out, Sleep, Sugar, and Survival, it's like an endless summer.
Right.
We always have access to fruit, and it's not just fruit, you know, in literally limitless supplies now, but it's fruit that's been Luther Burbank so that it's larger and sweeter and tastier and all that sort of stuff. So we never really have a scarcity period where, you know, with some construction in these anthropological, you know, views of our paleo diet, we probably should have gone in and out of a ketogenic state at various points during the
right.
year. And we just don't do that anymore. And it's kind of a hard thing because I'm definitely a libertarian at heart. I love seeing, you know, like free trade among countries and stuff like that. And so that gets a little tough when you want to see food distribution networks that happen quickly and equitably and, you know, distribute food around and everything. But then on a practical implementation level, it gets a little dodgy because if folks aren't aware that they maybe aren't best served eating watermelon in January when they live in North America, that can be a problem. And, like, for me saying that, I sound like a crazy person making that recommendation because folks are just like, well, I thought fruit was good for you. And it's like, yeah, it is, but maybe not as much as you're eating. And maybe
well,
not
let's talk about who says fruit is good for you. Now, hold on a second. The government sets the tone, and the agricultural industry sets the government's tone. Let's be
correct.
Very clear about that. So when people say fruit is good for you, they're right. Fruit is good for you, and so is water. But if you drink too much water, you can die. And
right.
and just because fruit is good for you doesn't mean it's good for you all the time. Fruit should not be eaten late at night because it causes hypoglycemia in the middle of the night. You don't get a good night's sleep. So there's this, yes, fruit is good for you, this statement in a vacuum. But who's promoting fruit? Why is fruit being promoted? Is it being promoted because of its health benefits? Because if it was, then there would be a caveat. Fruit is good for you, but only when you eat it at these times a day and in these kind of amounts. So it's up to people to educate themselves and see through that nonsense. And we have to vote with our dollars. You know what? Let them manufacture, you know, watermelon in January, but you don't have to buy it. Let the idiots buy it. You know what? Not everybody, you know, life isn't for everybody, maybe. Maybe I sound selfish now, but, you know.
No. I totally agree. That's much the stance that I take, very much a personal accountability stance. But at first blush, when you're presenting some of these concepts to people, it can be, I suspect like your listenership is much better steeped, much better educated on this stuff. I end up getting thrown into folks who are so disconnected from their body, so disconnected from their food because of our gym setting where we have people coming in who are really sick. You know, they have borderline type 2 diabetes, maybe they have full-blown type 2 diabetes, they have systemic inflammation that's as bad as a house burning down, and then you're faced with trying to explain some of these concepts in a way that you get buy-in and that hopefully, you know, you don't overwhelm folks. And so this I try to stay a little mindful of that.
But you know what I find interesting about that, Rob? People will believe the media when they say eating beef is bad for you. It causes heart disease, it causes cancer, blah 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 blah. And they'll buy that, you know, without a problem. But if you say, hey, eating too much fruit is not good for you, they won't buy that. And that's because people have by and large been brainwashed for two things. Brainwashed by the message and brainwashed by the messenger. They will only accept messages that come from the medical orthodoxy or the pharmaceutical industry as being true. You know,
right.
Beef is not bad for you when the animals are healthy animals, grass-fed, and they eat the way nature intended them to eat. And if you want, and I don't have to show you a schwack of studies to prove this. All I have to do is say, look, if all of the diseases that are killing us today were around 1,000 years ago, we wouldn't be here today having this conversation. We would have been wiped out already because we're on that track right now of being wiped out. And so, you know, I don't have to prove to you within a study. I could say to you, these people ate beef for thousands of years and they didn't have heart disease.
Right.
I mean, all you have to do is practice nutritional history and look at what people were eating and then ask yourself, hey, why weren't they getting sick like we are? Ah, now the light bulb goes off. It's because we're eating sick animals today. We're eating animals that are eating artificial diets.
Right.
So, you know, I just find that interesting.
Yeah, and it takes a little while for folks to connect the dots on some of that, but definitely the information is there. And then, I just implore people to get in and give the paleo approach a shot and, you know, do you look, feel, and perform better? Can you track biomarkers of health and disease and see them go in a favorable direction? And the answer to all that stuff is yeah. Like, it just works. I was on the phone with Professor Cordain today for about 2 hours, and we were talking about this. He just gave a talk in Boulder, Colorado, in front of 150 doctors and nurse practitioners, and there were quite a number of gastroenterologists in attendance, and these docs are recommending the paleo diet for things ranging from, like, ulcerative colitis to irritable bowel syndrome to gallbladder dysfunction. And these doctors were just kind of, you know, they just kind of swarmed Lauren at the end of his talk, and they said, we aren't really doing surgery anymore. Like, we're doing nutritional therapy now. But the thing is that what people have recommended in the past was always Neolithic-based diets, and it didn't work. It didn't address the underlying inflammation that people were getting on a gastrointestinal level, to say nothing of, like, cardiovascular disease.
Let's delve into that a little bit deeper. What is your opinion of the omega-3, omega-6 ratio of Paleolithic human beings? What was it?
It was about a 1:1 to 1:2. You got about equal amounts of omega-3 to omega-6, maybe a little bit more omega-6, but it certainly was not the 1:10, 1:20. Like, we're getting 10 or 20 times too much omega-6 in the diet at this point.
Which is it's pro-inflammatory.
It's massively pro-inflammatory.
And,
yeah.
And omega-3 is anti-inflammatory. And now we know from a recent study that omega-3s are anti-inflammatory on a genetic level. They actually switch the genes off that cause inflammation. So we're talking about going to domino number one and switching it off there with omega-3s. So when you look at that, and then you take into account the foods that we are eating today, which we couldn't eat as Paleolithic human beings because they needed to be ground down or blanched or boiled or processed in some way so they would become edible, like beans and grains and rice, which we couldn't eat, which all of them are loaded with what? Lectins, right?
Mm-hmm. And these, lectins and anti-nutrients.
And anti-nutrients, which are nature's natural way of keeping bugs from eating them. So we're basically eating nature's pesticides at the same time.
Right.
And that when you look at inflammation and you look at the reversal of ratio of omega-3 to omega-6 combined with eating these pro-inflammatory foods, it's no wonder why they don't have to do surgery anymore once they start eating paleo-style diets.
Yeah, it's remarkable, but it's a very heartening trend. If you look in like Google Analytics and stuff like that, like the search term paleo diet and things like gluten-free and things like that are poised to surpass search terms like vegetarian and vegan, and that's very, very exciting, because what it means is that a lot of people are starting to really change the way that they're thinking about stuff. And where there was a time when the sole province of people who were interested in good quality food and health and, like, you know, ecological sustainability, it was all vegetarian, and there's a burgeoning group of very politically minded, very activist people who have this evolutionary biology kind of orientation, and they're also armed with something that's really crazy, which is the diet that we're actually supposed to eat.
Right.
You know, in an evolutionary perspective, and this is coming out of places like the Max Planck Institute of Evolutionary Medicine, and there is no comparable correlate of things like that, you know, research institutions that are vegetarian-based, that are grain-based. Like, this stuff doesn't exist in, you know, as a research entity, because it's not centering on what human evolution was involved with, which is the paleo diet.
Rob, we have 3 minutes before the break. What's your opinion of GMO? Are you afraid of it? Do you care about it?
You know, I'm a little concerned about it. You know, like the GMO salmon, that scares me a good bit.
I know.
Like, I could see that thing just, like, waylay every other fish in the ocean. Our problem really, even at this point, is not food production. It's almost overproduction, and it's a lack of quality food. So I'm not seeing the compelling reason for generating this stuff. And this is coming from the perspective of a biochemist who loves genetics and loves tinkering and fiddling with nature. But I just don't, I see neither the need nor really the cost benefit analysis.
Like, in other words, Dolly the sheep was a cool experiment, but we don't want to eat her.
Yeah, it's like you can have that lamb chop. I'll pass on that one.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I'm afraid of, I eat no corn and I avoid corn-based products. I eat no soy and I avoid soy-based products. And I avoid as much as I can the sugar beet, because those are the three major genetically modified organisms out there. And my good friend Randy Roach he was prolific when he said to me one day, Carl, we don't know what GMO is doing to us. We won't know until our children have offspring, because we're already, you know, it's like having a building and then taking one brick out of it and going, hey, nothing happened, no big deal. But now take that building out, take that brick out while the wall was being built and the cement wasn't dry, and now you have a structural change. And so it's not, we can't tell what GMO is doing to us, although we do know it destroys the lining of the stomach. It's probably the reason for GERD and lots of the digestive issues that people have related to that. But when our children have children, we're going to see the real effects of GMO at that point in time. What would you say to that statement real briefly?
I would agree with that. Like the epigenetics, like how we're changing our food supply and how children in utero are being influenced by the food that we're eating, I would definitely agree with that.
All right. On that note, let's take a quick commercial break. You can learn more about Rob Wolf. He also has a great podcast. Go to robwolf.com, robwolf.com. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. You want to train harder. You want to get stronger. Then you want results. Results from At Large Nutrition combines four proven ergogenic ingredients: CreaPure, creatine monohydrate, beta-alanine, beta-hydroxy, beta-methylbutyrate, and dextrose. Results will dramatically increase strength, promotes blistering intensity, supports huge increases in training volume, and increased lean muscle mass. And isn't that why you train in the first place? That's why the strongest men in the world depend on results. You can find results at atlargenutrition.com. Stop complaining and get results today. Go to atlargenutrition.com right now. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at orbitnutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit orbitnutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com. PJ Braun knows how to get in shape and stay in shape. He's appeared in numerous bodybuilding and fitness magazines, and now he's ready to help you. Whether you're a man or a woman, PJ Braun has the expertise to help you reach your goals faster and easier than ever before. Utilize his one-on-one distance training services, and your friends will want to know what your secret is, but we'll never tell. Services are affordable and customizable to suit your individual needs. Nutrition, training, and supplementation are all covered. Stop spinning your wheels and start building the body that you've always dreamed of. Go to pjbraun.com today. That's pjbraun.com. Managing insulin is key to building muscle and staying lean. Now from needtobuildmuscle.net, get the most effective insulin mimicking, insulin sensitizing, nutrient partitioning supplement available without a prescription. Need2Slin. Need2Slin combines scientifically proven agents that shuttle glucose out of the bloodstream and into muscle, avoiding fat accumulation while simultaneously increasing insulin sensitivity on a cellular level. Need2Slin is so powerful that it should only be taken before a meal. You can get Need2Slin by visiting needtobuildmuscle.net. Don't risk another meal becoming fat and not muscle. Get Need2Slin today. Introducing SNI Global. SNI Global carries everything both the weekend warrior and serious athlete needs. Whether you're looking for pre-workout, post-workout, whey protein, mass builders, anabolic agents, performance enhancers, or energy boosters, you'll find it all at SNIGlobal.com. Want to train like a machine? Then get to SNI Global today. Check out their performance pack, loaded with over 10,000 grams of potent ingredients designed to increase energy, strength, muscle growth, and recovery. Go to SNIGlobal.com today. SNI Global, train like a machine.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
talking today with Rob Wolf, the author of The Paleo Solution. We're talking about Paleolithic style of eating. We really should just call it the natural human diet, instead of trying to make it sound like something new. It's what we have survived on for millions of years, until more recent times where we started to eat artificially. With that being said, I got a couple questions on Facebook from a couple listeners who are listening to the show live. This one comes from Brandon Lobato. By the way, he says your podcast is one of his top five favorites.
Cool.
He asked, ask Rob if whey protein is the same as eating dairy as far as the inflammatory response, and can this be inhibited or can it stop fat loss? Inhibit or stop fat loss, I'm sorry.
You know, the stuff with a lot of these things, these somewhat gray area items, you know, like dairy and whey protein, I like to ask, who are we talking about? Like, are we talking about a lean, hard-charging athlete? Then I can maybe see some need for potentially some post-workout whey protein, or if we have somebody who's really trying to do a mass gain or something like that, then I would recommend, like, some paleo plus dairy potentially. But if we have somebody who's trying to lean out, then I think the insulinogenic element of dairy, whey protein included in that, could be problematic. So instead of it being like a carte blanche kind of deal, I see dairy as being potentially very, very beneficial for some people and potentially very, very problematic for other folks.
And also to mention something that you just picked up on, the insulinogenic effect of whey protein and how rapidly it becomes glucose through the gluconeogenic pathway, that can be blunted when you have adequate amount of fat first. One of the things I do personally, thanks to Dr. Peter Rouse, who did this kind of impromptu study at the AF Performance Center, is, you know, to utilize fat before or with your whey protein drink. What I do is I actually eat a handful of nuts or a whole avocado about 15 minutes before I have my whey protein, so that fat is already in my stomach and it's kind of lining my stomach. And then when the whey protein hits it, it kind of slows gastric emptying and slows that onrush into the liver. What would you say about that?
Yeah, like I have a low-carb kind of recipe for using coconut milk, like a half can of coconut milk, and then your scoop or two of whey protein. And it reaches kind of the same deal. But again, I would recommend that in kind of select scenarios. Like when I go through my Paleo Solution seminar, one of the fat loss flubs, you know, one of the primary ones is sleep loss. Like, people aren't getting enough sleep, and so they're not losing body fat. The other one is that they're using too much dairy, and too much can be very, very relative. That's where folks are really focused on leaning out. I pull dairy out of the equation entirely. Get them as lean as they want, then reintroduce it. And even then, I still see a lot of people who have some inflammatory issues with dairy. I really, really strongly encourage folks to seek out grass-fed dairy sources.
Bingo. You know why? Because there's lectins in milk as a result of the artificial diets that some of the cows are eating. So
exactly.
you have a pass-through effect. So that's an important factor. Let me ask you another question that's also on the board here. And this one comes from Ben Wiley. I hope I'm pronouncing your last name properly, Ben. It's either Wiley or Willie. I'm assuming it's Wiley. He says, to ask Rob what he thinks about gelatin from healthy animals, like you would get from during a real bone broth, and what he thinks the benefits from regular consumption of this, especially for gut health, etc.
Oh, gosh, you know, that's an interesting question. I think it's, you know, really good. When I'm looking at bone broth, like, we save all of our we get a grass-fed, usually a half a cow, and then, like, every scrap of bone I end up throwing in a airtight, like, freezer bag and throw that in our deep freeze. And then when I get a pretty good-sized bag of that, I will throw all of the bones into a pressure cooker and then make kind of a gelatinous bone broth, but it's more of a cooking stock kind of gig. I look at that more as a benefit from the perspective of some kind of easily assimilable minerals and also the omega-3 fats. I've never really considered the collagen element of that. It would certainly be great. It would be a really good source of it, but I've always thought more from the perspective of omega-3 fats and really easily assimilated minerals.
You know, if you're trying to do something good for your stomach, one of the things you do is make a porridge or a soup out of leeks, onions, and artichokes, which are considered prebiotics, and they actually have a more profound effect on the biotic landscape of the stomach than taking probiotics. So if that, you know, that's something that you could think about as well. Okay. What about, where do you stand on what I like to call the extreme paleo diet? And that is eating raw meat. I'm a raw meat eater. I don't do it as often. It grosses people out. There was a period of time where I was doing it almost exclusively for a few months. Raw meat, raw fish. I never crossed the bridge on raw chicken, but I have a lot of friends who do. What do you think about that?
Seems a little extreme to me. I mean, certainly if you want to roll that way, it's fine. I do a little steak tartare here and there. I do some sashimi. I like all that stuff, but at the same time, like just from a microbial, infestation kind of deal, if you sear a piece of meat or fish on the outside, then you're basically dealing with any type of like microbial problem
that could be on the surface. I see what you're saying. So yeah. you're not talking about something that's infested in the flesh itself. You're saying the surface where it's been handled and touched.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that way you deal with any type of food handling issues, but then the interior is still for all intents and purposes raw.
Yeah.
And so that seems like a good middle ground for me. And I think that it's cool to tinker with that, maybe do a little bit, like throw a little bit in the mix, but I don't see like massive benefit from like being 100%, you know, raw paleo. Maybe some folks will argue against that, but it also from a practical application standpoint, like I traveled 34 weeks a year the last 2 years, and I'm pressed to get things that look like paleo at all while not getting a gluten exposure. And so at some point it's kind of like, okay, great, you know, so you're raw paleo, you're raw vegan, or you're whatever. So obviously you live at home, you never travel, you have a super tightly controlled life. You don't live my life. Like, you're not dashing from one airport to another and trying to figure out if the scrambled eggs at the hotel
is real.
It's real. Do they have cake batter in it,
right,
or something weird?
I always ask that. So, now, when I go out someplace and order an omelet, I say, now, do these eggs come from a carton or they come from actual eggs? And if they say no, they come from a carton, I'm like, nah, forget that. Let's do something else then. Because that's got pancake batter in it. That's what it has.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the big chain places, they put a pancake batter in their omelets to fluff them up, and like I am wickedly intolerant to gluten, so that would crush.
Well, now let's talk about this for a second. We talk about the gluten just for a second from a standpoint of something that I said I wanted to ask you about, and then a moment ago you said, you know, some people can tolerate dairy, some people can't. How much of a role do you think that polymorphisms to our ability to assimilate certain foods because of our genetic predisposition to it over the evolutionary process plays a role in our ability to eat foods and not have them cause a bad reaction?
Well, I would say that we are more similar than not.
Okay.
As just kind of a slippery caveat up front. Like, it's being a little bit slippery, but I would say we are more common than not. But then within that caveat, then you certainly have people who can get away with more latitude in their eating and still remain relatively healthy. Everybody has a story about an Uncle Fred who like smoked and drank and chased women until he was 85 and lived a great life. And then we all know people, you know, Jim Fix, and then the dude who founded Power Bar, who died in their early 50s from, you know, excessive exercise, aerobic exercise, and a high carb, low fat diet. And so there's obviously a bunch of variabilities within this. Nutrition is one feature. All kinds of other environmental factors, including amount and quality of sleep and stress and like all kinds of other stuff, play into this. So there's a lot of caveats within that stuff. What I see in general is that if people generally eat a grain, legume, and I'll throw dairy in their dairy-free diet, they tend to exhibit fewer signs and symptoms of inflammation. We can track it on blood work. We notice that they aren't as sniffly, they don't have as much joint pain, they're not as stiff and achy in the morning. Again, talking to Professor Cordain this morning, we kind of feel like the rate of aging, and this is kind of a spectrum, a type 2 diabetic is aging about a third faster than the average non-diabetic person, but then I would argue that the person emulating a paleo diet is aging about a third slower than the average mixed diet, you know, standard American diet person who is not overtly type 2 diabetic.
Right.
And so I think that there's a huge spectrum in there. So some people can tolerate more more latitude with their food than others. There's no doubt about that. It, just think about like sunburn. You know, some people are darker skinned, some people are lighter skinned. On the flip side of that, some people are going to develop vitamin D deficiency sooner because of you know, darker, lighter skin.
Right, because darker skinned people obviously evolved under conditions of greater excess of the sun, and as a result of that, they produce vitamin D at a slower rate. So the body is always adjusting to its environment.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I mean, it's very intelligent. The body adjusts to its environment. It's amazing.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that there's differences, but again, like, in general, what I notice is that folks who eat a grain, legume, dairy-free diet, they say, yeah, I feel better. And then upon the reintroduction of grains, legumes, and dairy, they usually say, I experience more GI problems, we can track different signs and symptoms of inflammation via blood work, and there's usually what we end up finding is folks get some sort of like an 80-85% compliance where they eat paleo more, you know, 5 days out of seven. And then when they kick their heels up, it's more of like a rice and corn kind of gig. And almost a universality is that the gluten wheat deal is like a really big factor.
I know. Right? And isn't it amazing that that area of agriculture is propped up by the government, both in subsidy and accessibility. And, you know, they want everybody, I mean, when you look at the food pyramid, right, they want everybody to eat, you know, how many servings of cereals and breads and pastas a day? It's like, duh, this is why we're dying. This is why we have all this disease today. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see this, but when will people open up their eyes and change something? I'll tell you something else I'm going to say right now. I'm going to piss off some people, but I think that diseases like fibromyalgia and a lot of autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis are completely and absolutely linked to the diet. These people
absolutely
are eating disease. They're eating foods that are exacerbating their immune system, and the immune system just goes haywire. It says, you know what? If you're going to just, you know, if you have a cat in the house and it has one mouse, the cat can manage it. But if you let, like, 30 dozen mice loose in that house, that cat will go crazy after a while trying to catch them all and eat them or put them over here. It's like you overwhelm the system. You're overwhelming the system when you put all of this crap in our food. It's just amazing to me. Never mind, we haven't even talked about the artificial agents like preservatives and color enhancers, and they're even putting color enhancers in salmon now. Have you seen that, Rob? I mean,
red number five.
Oh, my God. Give me a break. All right, look, let's take our last commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about an actual product line that Rob's involved with. For those of you who want to eat more paleo style, but convenience is an issue, we have an answer for you. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Train harder. You want to get stronger. Then you want results. Results from At Large Nutrition combines four proven ergogenic ingredients: CreaPure creatine monohydrate, beta-alanine, beta-hydroxy beta-methylbutyrate, and dextrose. Results will dramatically increase strength, promotes blistering intensity, supports huge increases in training volume, and increased lean muscle mass. And isn't that why you train in the first place? That's why the strongest men in the world depend on results. You can find results at atlargenutrition.com. Stop complaining and get results today. Go to atlargenutrition.com right now. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best price and fastest customer service at orbitnutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit orbitnutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. orbitnutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at orbitnutrition.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all. There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking today with Rob Wolf, author of The Paleo Solution. You were at a book signing earlier today, huh?
Actually, interview. We made New York Times bestseller last week, and so we've just been dealing with some of the great collateral stuff with that. So
congratulations, that's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's wonderful to see you doing well with this, but it's even more wonderful to me to see that people are starting to get it, because it's just a matter of time before we can get this country healthy again, and we don't have to depend on the pharmaceutical agenda and the medical orthodoxy to sell us lies and parasitically drain us dry of our money while we wither away in some friggin' institution. Because that's the way it's done now.
If we're going to save ourselves, it's going to come from us saving our own bacon. It's not going to come from the top down.
That's right.
Absolutely the case.
That's right. We vote with our dollars. Let that other crappy food rot away on the shelves, and the manufacturers will start to scratch their head and go, well, we better sell them what they want instead of what we want to sell them.
Right.
Let me ask you about this, and you and I have talked about this. You have a product, line that people can learn about by going to PaleoBrands, PaleoBrands.com, and I checked it out. And basically what you've done is minimally processed, all Paleolithic-style foods, grass-fed beef, you know, animals that eat natural diets, but you've portion-controlled it out to make it simple for people who have active lifestyles. How did that come about? Whose idea was that?
You know, it's kind of funny. My two friends now, John Wellborn, who was a 10-year NFL veteran, and then Joe Capuccio, who's been in big time in the fish business for a long, long time, they were just chatting about this whole paleo diet concept. And then I was actually, and this was over a year ago, I was supposed to give a talk at a gym down in L.A., and because of some scheduling conflicts, it was looking like I wouldn't be able to give the talk. And so John Wellborn gave that talk for me, and he drug our friend Joe to this gig, and Joe was kind of like, huh, okay, this paleo thing kind of makes sense. And then Joe told his mother, Hope, about this whole paleo diet concept, and you would probably recognize from Capuccio, you know, it's like Italian family. And so his mother is like old school Italian, speaks Italian, you know, I mean, the classics, you know, spaghetti feeds on Sundays and all that sort of stuff. And he said, hey, Mom, I think I want you to try this paleo thing. Eat this, that, and the other, and don't eat any of this other stuff. I mean, like real back of the envelope kind of thing. And when Joe saw his mom about 2 months later, his mother had been suffering from alopecia, from hair loss, since her mid-40s. And Hope is now 60. But when Joe saw his mom, her hair was growing back. And like Joe literally, like, almost collapsed on the ground crying. It was like, oh, my God, what did you do? And she said, well, I ate that diet you told me to eat. And so Joe was just basically like, everybody needs to eat this way. You know, we need to get this message out to everyone. And it was just such a stark deal. You know, like, if anybody could do it, you know, if a old-school Italian woman who's, you know, who speaks Italian fluently.
Well, not only that, there's a misconception out there that in order to eat paleo style, you have to abandon flavor. And that obviously isn't going to happen with an old school Italian woman.
Yeah. And so she just revamped a bunch of her standard stuff like marinara sauces and meatballs. And you pull out the grain products and you put the you know, you get different binders in the meatballs like almond flour, and then you put it over spaghetti squash, and it's as good, if not better, than what the original product was.
Wow, that is really cool. Really, really cool. You know what I'd love to see, and I've been waiting for this. I was thinking about writing a letter to the cooking channel, you know, the Food Network, whatever that they have all of, you know, Paula Deen is cooking all of this stuff that's killing people. It's killing her and her husband. And she just loves, butter and sugar sandwiches and all that sort of stuff. And then you got Emeril, who ballooned up to at least 300 pounds at one point in time. And now he's thinned out, but clearly he was just eating his own food. I'm waiting for them to go, you know, maybe this paleo thing is going to catch on. Maybe we should find somebody who can cook paleo style, but make it really palatable. I really think that somebody needs to reach out. Maybe it's you. You need to reach out to the cooking channel because we need representation out there. Because this illusion that, well, if you want to eat healthy, you can't enjoy your food is just bunk.
Right, right. Well, and you know, the tough thing, like, it, definitely giving that a shot would be great. To some degree, the little tough deal there is that so much of the advertising that those folks receive. Now, granted, there's definitely some meat interest there, but even then, the meat interests are all grain-fed meat. The funny thing with paleo is that we piss everybody off. Yeah. Like, the vegetarians don't like us. The grain-fed meat people don't like us. The
dairy people don't like us.
Dietitians don't like us. You know, I mean, nobody likes what we're saying. We have actually received, out of all of these different camps, some of the more spicy kickback has come out of the grain-fed meat folks.
Really?
Because we're saying, hey, eat grass-fed meat. And these people have really got up in my junk a couple of times. And even though I say, hey, just try to get, you know, generally I just recommend if you can't find grass-fed meat, eat leaner cuts of standard meat, which is as good a friend as these guys have right now with the government. Basically, they just revamped the food pyramid and said everybody should be vegetarian.
Yeah, I know.
So these guys should be looking for, like, any friend they could get. And like, they actually – I've had some fairly spicy kickback from those folks.
Well, you know what baffles me? They're idiots then, because what they need to do is they – well, no, listen. Come on. People are willing to pay a little bit more to eat healthy and live longer. And so what they need to do is, instead of resisting change, they need to go, wow – let's not go the way of the railroad when the automobile came along. Let's find a way to compromise and keep people happy. They need to start raising more grass-fed beef and making more grass-fed beef available. But they can't do it in a slimy, backwards way where they go, well, yeah, these cows are eating grass, but they're eating the wrong kind of grass, or we found a way to cut a corner. They're eating grass right. Mixed with cricket blood or something. You know, it's like, because they're always looking for that edge. Like, well, we can make an extra nickel a pound if we feed them grass and sawdust, you know,
right.
And sawdust is natural. So they need to just do it right, because people will pay. Just the way people will pay for this crap stuff that they're giving us now, they'll pay for the good stuff. And so, big deal. You won't, each farm won't yield as much. Big deal. So there'll be more farms. And that's what I really want to see. I want to see these big companies go, you know, let's start working with the small family farms and let's get them to help us be in the grass-fed beef business.
Yeah, they need to decentralize this stuff. There was a huge paper that just came out a few days ago that looked at the resource allocation that would be lifted off of, like, water and CO2 emissions and methane emissions if you just had a grass-fed herd of cattle in the United States supplying all of the meat needs. If it was all grass-fed, it would be much less dirty on an environmental standpoint. And there's absolutely no argument about that. When you track the amount of oil that goes into growing the grains and then all of the processing of the grains to then feed the cattle, it's a wickedly inefficient system
right.
That would be dealt with much more directly.
Well, let's face it, Rob, it would never come about if the government wasn't using our tax dollars to help them maintain that inefficient system. That's what subsidy is all about. The government pays them to be inefficient. They say, hey, you know, we would never be able to grow this stuff and do this. Well, we'll just give you some tax dollars. No. They need to scratch their head and go, well, if you guys can't afford to grow these crops at an economical rate, maybe you should be growing something else.
Exactly. Yeah, and this is where, like, that libertarian streak I have comes out. You know, if we leveled that playing field, if we didn't have government subsidies.
Free market.
Now, granted, it's
free
going
market.
To impact. Yeah, we need some free market on this stuff.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that because people are better educated than they've ever been, because of the rapidity of being able to disseminate information that we now have with like Facebook and Twitter and the internet and whatnot, this is what has driven the paleo concept, because people are able to compare notes faster and more effectively than they ever have. And there's a huge burgeoning political movement that is, for the first time, both wielding the most effective dietary practice that we have, but also an orientation towards sustainability of food sourcing and ecological considerations. That marriage has never happened before.
Right.
And I think a lot of people are right now scratching their heads, but this is going to change some stuff.
When it happens, I'm going to do a Martin Luther King-esque I have a dream speech on this show. I really am. I'm going to do it. Listen, this beef with curry pistachio stuffing and broccoli sounds out of this world. I'm looking at the picture. People, you need to go to Paleo Brands, PaleoBrands.com. This is the TV dinner approach to paleo dieting. It's a minimally processed, healthy food. It's just portion controlled and frozen for you, so it makes it easy for you to prepare. You could take it with you to work. I'm not going to say put it in the microwave, because everybody knows I'm against microwave ovens, but sit on it and warm it up if you have to. That's all.
I'll take that bullet, and I'll say that versus you eating a bagel and some goldfish crackers, it's probably okay to microwave.
I'm holding my hands over my ears. God say, okay, there you go. But anyway, this is really cool stuff. How long has this company been around, Paleo Brands?
Just about a year. We're coming up on our first year in business, and we're bringing back a grass-fed gluten-free jerky line, which we ended up, it was very, very popular, and we actually sold out of. And then we have kind of a snacky, dessert-oriented almond raisin cookie. And the line is definitely going to expand with time. That's where we're at right now, though, with the full line. We have 5 different frozen meals, grass-fed meat, wild-caught fish, all organic produce that goes into it, and they're pretty darn good.
Well, here's what I'm going to say to everybody. We have to send a message to the large agricultural consortiums, the grain-fed beef people, that we are willing to get behind companies that are going to provide the right types of products for us, that are going to help us embrace longevity and health as opposed to getting sick. So check out the website, paleobrands.com. If there's something that looks good there, try it. I'd like to have some feedback from my listeners, too. Anybody who orders any of the food, I'll put you on the show if you can tell me. I don't care if you liked it, you didn't like it, because if you didn't like it, then Rob will get some feedback on what he needs to change about it. And if you did like it, we'll talk about it. But try to support people who are trying to do the good things, because we're really pushing against a big, big tide here, a tide that would rather separate us from our money and shorten our lives. And that's the bottom line. They don't care that they're shortening our lives. All they want to know is the investors are making their dividends this quarter. So, you know, try to support companies that are doing the right thing. Hey, Rob, I want to thank you so much for making time to come on Superhuman Radio, man.
Huge honor being on the show. I've been a fan of the show for a long time.
I didn't know that.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for saying that.
Absolutely. I ship around your interviews with Professor Cordain, and then you just had Dr. K on here, and I've been shipping that around to everybody. So,
Very cool. I appreciate it. And please come back on the show anytime. And we'll have another live episode. We're going to have Mike Mahler on tomorrow. We're going to be talking about kettlebell training and its effects on hormone levels in both men and women. You don't want to miss that show. So we'll see you tomorrow.